Hello, and thanks for tuning in to this joint collaborative effort between KGVM's Local Musician Spotlight and In the Music Box by Loken Productions. Glad to get an opportunity to do another one of these joint ventures, and this is a special one. We're not in the KGVM studios today, obviously. I wish this was the KGVM studios, but we're in the Lay Lounge at MSU for this episode of the Spotlight because they had a piano, and I was trying to think about how long it's been since I've actually been in this room listening to music, and boy, it's been a long time, and I think probably one of the last times I was here for a KGLT Livewire episode, Pat was mixing the sound for it, so things all come back together in the end. And today I'm happy to be here with Abby Winger, and she's a local, does a whole bunch of different things here locally. A piano player, which is why we needed a piano. And I wonder if you could, we'll start out with the kind of the easy questions. How did you get into playing music and how long have you been playing music?
Yeah, so I've played piano. Officially, I started when I was 10. So I've been playing for 21 years now. I've wanted to play ever since I was a little kid. I'd sneak over to my neighbor's house and just plonk on their piano. And, my mom would never know where I was. So she'd call over there and like, yep, sure enough, she's down there hitting the piano. So I've always loved, I don't know why it just struck me, but I've always loved the piano. And I have to tell this story. My dad will kill me, but I have to. My first piano was for my 10th birthday. And they took me to Eckroth Music, which is our local music store. And they bring me in, there's this piano sitting there with balloons on it that says happy birthday, but I didn't process that it was my piano. I thought they were just taking me to see pianos. So I didn't have the best reaction at first, and then it finally clicked and it dawned on me and I was a little more appropriately excited. But that's not where the story ends. My mom and my dad, my brother was playing hockey at the time, so my mom had to take my brother to go drive him to hockey practice or something. My dad was supposed to load up the piano and take me home. Somewhere in the shuffle, the piano got home, Tony got to hockey practice, I was left in the store.
Oh.
So my added birthday present was just sitting there for a while until they finally figured it out, playing all the grand pianos to my heart's content.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I've been playing for a long time.
Seems like, they missed an opportunity to tell you that was all by design.
Yeah.
So that you got extra time with the pianos.
I'm surprised my dad hasn't spun it his way yet.
Yeah,
he just kind of shamefacedly accepts that he forgot his daughter on her birthday. Sorry, Dad.
So you've you're working on kind of toward being able to do sound for doing scores and music and film sound?
Yeah, so my background is I have my bachelor's degree in film production. So I currently work at Montana PBS. I'm a producer for them, and I run the gamut of film production. I direct, I produce, I write, I shoot. I'm one-man crew, so why not add in the music as well? But what got me to that point, I was working for the communications office at MSU for 5 years, and we had a pretty minimal budget for music or really any sort of production. So I would spend literally days going through these horrible stock music sites trying to find anything that would work. And after years and years of listening to 99% garbage and finding occasional few things, I, thought to myself, I could probably do this myself. I should learn how. So I started looking around and I eventually found a program through Berklee College of Music online. And so I pursued it and currently I have my professional certificate with them for composing for film and TV. So they ran us through the gamut of really just a crash course of here's how to write for movies. So we took orchestration, we learned how to write for a whole symphony orchestra, we learned how to write solo pieces, learned different styles for different types of movies. So if you have a horror film, here's things that work. If you have action, etc. So I currently have my professional certificate through Berklee, and hopefully we'll be working on my master's in the near future with them. So
nice. And so hopefully be able to do that and kind of hang here and keep working.
Yeah, yep. So if I end up doing the master's, again, it's all online. They just recently started the online master's, which is fantastic. So the goal will be continue to work here at PBS doing production, and then ideally start writing music for some of our films. And I'm kind of in the audition stage for one of our documentaries. Mavericks is a ski film, so I'm writing a bunch of music for that at the moment, and then we'll see if the directors like it or not. that's been a new level with music for me. Because I, you know, all the piano pieces that we heard, those are just for me. They're not for a client or anything. I can do whatever I want. No one has to be happy except me. When you write for a movie, it's kind of baring your soul and letting someone tear it apart if they want to. So
yeah,
it's a little nerve-wracking. It's a new muscle to build up, I think, to get used to putting what I think is good content and then having to totally shift gears to meet other people's expectations.
So. Yeah. How much different is it when you're writing and trying to fit it into the mood of the scene versus writing something that you're just listening to?
The strategy is different, I think. If I'm just writing a piano piece for me, it comes out more of a song, there's more melody, it doesn't matter if it's big and loud and dramatic. When you're writing for a movie, dialogue is king. You can't overtake the dialogue, so you know, you have a little bit of melody, you might have some chords, some dissonant patterns, but it oftentimes doesn't really work out to be a song. Like, it's kind of an acquired taste to listen to soundtracks. Some of them sound great on their own, others are just sort of impressions. So when I write for a movie, I first either just think on my own or I discuss with directors, like, what are the emotions here? What kind of story are you trying to tell? And that'll help clue me into some of the cues. So one of the pieces I played was for a horror film that I did for a student here at MSU. And it's not much, you know, it's just a few kind of repetitive melodies, but when you pair it with strings and some other sound effects and stuff, it really builds up into a bigger piece. So with the movies, I just kind of think little tiny chunk, like, here's a good piano line, I like that, what can I add to it? Here's maybe the strings play the chords, maybe I can add in a cymbal crash at a key moment or something and go from there.
Yeah. You've composed some pieces outside of that, just for listening, for your own listening enjoyment.
Yeah.
Do you like that kind of that mix of doing some of one and some of the other? Or?
Yeah, I do. It helps give me purpose. If I'm, you know, I never really started composing my own stuff until maybe a year or two ago, really, when I got into Berkeley. I just never had the drive or knew where to start, so it's difficult for me to just sit and think of something. So if I have with a film score, there's a purpose, there's a story, I already have some guidance. With myself, I kind of either end up making up a story in my head, or there's some emotion, or there's some purpose for why I've written all of these pieces that you heard today.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm the last person that would ever be able to write a piece of music, probably. But it does, when I listen to instrumental pieces, it seems to me like it must be, and this probably isn't true, but from my perception, harder because, and part of it's my, you know, just my perception that people are really oriented around spoken language, right? And so having that kind of touch point that comes from a place where that's so familiar to us seems like that would be easier than writing an instrumental piece where, like you said, you're making up the story in a song with lyrics too, but it seems like it's kind of this two-step process, and it would be maybe a little more challenging to make up a story without that spoken part. And like I said, that's probably presupposing that everybody thinks the same way I do, and maybe other people think in music or more like that. So, but is it kind of, do you think that's more challenging to kind of find the touch point to start from?
Yeah, I've never really written anything with lyrics, so I can't talk about that process. But, you know, as a kid, all through growing up playing piano, I constantly played classical music. And I'd always see a story in my head. You know, there's certain points where an image flashes in your head. And that's just always kind of the way I've related to music, is just a visual medium almost. So, you know, I'm playing the notes, I'm hearing it, but in my head, it's almost as if I'm watching a movie. So in some sense, it kind of makes sense that my career is taking me to this point where now I literally am writing for movies. I can actually see them, not just imagining them in my brain anymore. But it's you know, it's in some sense that helped me memorize. You know, classical pianists are always expected to have the entire piece memorized, which I never thought was entirely fair. But
That's true.
That's the expectation. So some of those visual cues help me, you know, memorize things and just build the muscle memory. And when I'm writing my own pieces, it's kind of the same thing. So I don't ever necessarily have like a concrete film in my head, if you will, but I have some flashes that remind me like, okay, this is the point where I'm at. So when you mess up or you panic and you start, your brain just shuts down. I always rely on those visuals to get back to it.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't have the, oh, here comes the chorus again.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's very interesting to me. Obviously different people interpret different things from lyrics as well, but I think it's a lot more wide open and there's more of an exercise left to the listener with an instrumental track, and just to think about the different ways that people might perceive your work when they're listening to it, and like the different emotions that it might evoke for them. How different is the movie that they're watching in their head from the one that you were thinking of is, I think, kind of a fascinating exercise to consider anyway.
Yeah, that's always been in the back of mind too, wondering about that. Even when I'm producing films, which is much more concrete, you have dialogue, you have other things, it's still pretty drastically different interpretations people can take about things. So, I'll make an edit where I have zero significance on this, but somebody, it'll mean something to them,
right?
And they think it's a big moment. So, yeah, human interpretation is always fascinating to me. And I kind of see instrumental music a little bit like a ballet. You're all seeing it, you're all hearing the same thing, but there's no one narrating the story for you. It's kind of up to you to make it what you will, which I think is fun.
Yeah. There are probably people out there trying to get to the bottom of this too, but I suspect that might have a lot to do with the reason why some people might be more or less fans of ballet or of instrumental music than of other music, because they have to, really do have to do some more work in some sense, right, to it, to really enjoy it. I think you have to put something of yourself into it, and so. Yeah, I wonder maybe if you would like to play a piece, and then we'll maybe talk about it a little bit.
Sure, yeah. Thank you. So that first piece we just heard was actually really the first piano piece I wrote in any sort of entirety other than just a few little melodies or doodles. And I call it Winter. So this was a piece for my Berklee Orchestration 1 class, I believe, for my final project. And they wanted us to write a piece for an entire symphony orchestra, which is a pretty big undertaking, especially when none of us really knew how to just start, like, here, write a symphony. So our instructor had us write a solo piece first, and then we could build off of that. So this was my piano skeleton for my eventual symphony interpretation of this song. And as I was sitting there, it was March, I think, and I was watching yet another Montana blizzard swirl around me. And so I was thinking, you know, I should write something that feels like the season. So this was my interpretation of a winter blizzard, where you have a few kind of snowflakes coming down and then just builds up into chaos, and before you know it, it's gone, and then it's back, and good old Montana fashion. You don't really know what's coming.
That's about right.
Yeah. So that was a fun one, and I like it both as a piano solo, and then my eventual orchestration, I think, had 80 some instruments included in it.
Did you get the opportunity to have a symphony perform it?
No, I wish. So I do everything through software. So I pay for a subscription, and technology astounds me. So I'm playing the piano for the entire orchestra, but I just select, I want violins, and I play my violin notes, and I want the tubas over here. So I can play an entire symphony from my keyboard.
That's, MIDI is amazing.
Yeah, it's great.
Well, that's pretty cool. Yeah, I think that, you know, it's kind of funny, and I have a hard time because, you know, we're talking about, like, the listener's perception and stuff. Just thinking about, like, you know, it's kind of a gray day out here today, and, you know, we're looking out the windows of the Lay Lounge, and it's, you know, it's kind of a gray day. It's not super oppressively overcast, but just kind of thinking about that fit with that music pretty well, and now, you know, I guess that makes sense. Just kind of wondering about if it had been a bright, sunny day, what that piece would have sounded like to me, you know, how much difference would that make, and what kind of different feelings it might evoke.
Yeah, I tend not to play it on nice days. I've tried before, and it just feels
just
weird.
But,
you know, if we get a rainy day or it's snowing out, it's just like, that's the one I always want to play. It just seems to fit.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if you maybe want to play another one, and we'll talk about that.
Thank you.
That was a pretty high energy piece. Seemed like a lot of dynamics in there, and like a lot of kinetics, I guess, and pretty active left hand on that song.
Yeah, so this piece was one, you know, I didn't really have a story or anything in mind. I was just kind of messing around with some sounds, and then the story found me. So I was writing this in late spring, early summer of this year, which, as we all know, is a pretty tumultuous time. And I ended up going to the Black Lives Rally march here in Bozeman, which was pretty astounding to see. You know, 5,000-6,000 people showed up to this. It was really, really inspirational to see a community, especially here in Montana, where we don't have a high population of people of color here, but to still see that support. And I just was kind of overwhelmed with the feelings of it, but not great at expressing that. So this piece just kind of morphed into what I was feeling, which is a bit of hope, a bit of frustration, a bit of sadness, but mostly just having this feeling of marching on through this circus we find ourselves in. So there's a point where I end up switching the time signature into more of a waltz, and that's kind of what I was thinking, is we're just on this carousel that we can't seem to get ourselves off of. You know, we make some progress, and then we make some back, and we make some progress, and so it was just kind of my feeling of there's a lot in this world right now, and I don't know what to say, so let's just throw it on the piano.
Does that process of writing the song and kind of tweaking it and figuring out how it fits in with your emotions, does that kind of help you process outside of the song? Is it kind of a cathartic action?
Yeah, it really does. Because it's, you know, my job is behind the camera usually. This is rare for me to be on the side speaking about things. So it does help, just for me personally, to kind of let some feelings out that aren't really tangible to put into words sometimes. Like, it's just sort of an impression you have, but not really able to express it. So it does help to just kind of pound on the key sometimes.
Yeah. I suppose maybe this would be different if you were making films, but you really don't have too much leeway if you're, like, you. Even documentaries or news segments or whatever else you might be doing, to get too expressive with the camera, right?
Yeah. So when I'm writing, for writing anything for film, it's hard to have these big moments, at least active moments. You can have lots of, you know, layers of sounds. So you might have the entire orchestra builds up to a chord and then comes crashing down and followed by a little piano or something, but unless, if there's a scene with any dialogue, you can't do much. Some of the action scenes are fun because they're not talking usually. If you have a fight scene, you can get really excited and lots of fast chords, lots of big notes. But, you know, documentary is a lot of time often talking, so that is a different style. You just have more ambient sounds or just some underlying chords, things like that.
Yeah. So do you... So you're hoping that you'll be able to build this up, and do you hope that you'll be able to kind of do that from here?
Yeah, that's my goal. Montana has a pretty active film scene, believe it or not. We have a lot of independent filmmakers who come through here. We have a great team that is lobbying for different tax incentives to get some of these bigger Hollywood productions here. We've had a few over the years, not too many, but it's getting more noticed. The series Yellowstone is being shot in Montana right now, and so I would love to get more involved with some of our local filmmakers. I know we have a lot of musicians here who could easily write music for movies, but it's kind of a different ball game. You have to also know how film works and know how to work with directors, know how to work with producers, the whole gamut, which I now have a good 12 years experience working on the film side, so I'm excited to bring in this music part as well.
Yeah, it seems like that, having the experience on the film side and behind the camera and stuff, is got to make it easier to hook everything together, I would think. That probably is a pretty good advantage.
Yeah, and, you know, I do all of the positions with film, but editing has always been my favorite, and I think a lot of that is due from music, and, you know, like I said, as a kid, I'm always seeing these stories in my head, so... It just kind of fits, and when you're editing a film, there is a rhythm to it. You know, it is very musical in a way, so Sometimes you need some slow shots to breathe. Other times you need it really quick, fast cuts with some more energy. So editing films and writing music, to me, goes just hand in hand.
Yeah. Especially kind of more classical music where there, again, I'm not well versed in classical music, but my perception is that things like that where you've kind of got a lot of different textures and feels throughout one single piece, a lot of other music maybe isn't nearly done to that extent, right? So it seems like that really maybe goes well.
Yeah, there's definitely, you know, in classical, there's definitely patterns. You have like your ABA structure, things like that. I tend to stick a little bit with that. Most of what my stuff does doesn't really fit many patterns or even necessarily like a good beat structure. I'm trying to work on that so when I eventually have to transcribe this to sheet music for projects that it makes sense. So that's a skill I'm working on, is making this a little bit more, not formulaic, but interpretable, that's a word. Understandable from someone else's perspective. So I would be able to hand this off and let someone else play it. So I'm working on that, but definitely with classical, there's dips and valleys, just kind of like a story, whereas, you know, rock or pop or singer-songwriter stuff, there's still ways you can, you know, branch out, but it does tend to be more like you have your chorus, you have your verse, you have your bridge, and then the creative side comes out in the lyrics. So since you don't have that option in instrumental, you have to make it diverse somehow. So.
Right. If you were editing film the same way that you edited a rock song, it would probably get kind of boring pretty fast,
yeah.
I would guess.
Yeah.
Like not mixing things up the pace.
Yeah.
And the...
But even then, you know, they're cliches for a reason in films. You have your three-act structure, you know, there's the little challenge, the second challenge, and then you have the third challenge, and then they come down to a peak. And, you know, every genre has its trope, but they're cliches for a reason. They work. So.
Yeah, they didn't get to be cliches.
Yeah.
Out of picking them out of a hat.
Exactly.
Cool. Yeah, I wonder if you want to play another song.
Yeah, definitely. So this was a piece I actually did specifically for a video that I was working on at Montana PBS. Our director of education asked me to shoot some video of her work that she does in classrooms. So she has a grant where she goes to all bunch of schools in rural Montana and teaches them how to use technology, and just helps them do these teacher trainings, because a lot of these rural schools, they don't have the resources or the time or substitutes for them to go off to a professional conference where they can learn some of these things. So Nikki is our basically traveling professional development for educators in Montana. And I, you know, I was finishing up some of my work at Berkeley. I really wanted to try writing something for an actual project, so I ended up just messing around with this, and it's a chord pattern that just repeats itself over and over and over again. So I joke and call it the song that never ends, and I eventually do just cut it off at some point. But it sounds, to me, it sounds a little bit like a superhero theme, which fits, because I think our teachers are definitely superheroes this year, above any year that I've ever seen. But so it is, you know, there's maybe 12 chords that I just break up either with an arpeggio, or I play them as chords, and I just try to vary the pattern so it doesn't sound too repetitive. But throughout that whole song, I think I repeat it 8 times, maybe.
Yeah, it's definitely some kind of hopeful feeling, and
this is one, again, where it's a lot of talking, so I couldn't get too wild with it. So even though it is faster notes, it's consistently faster, so they kind of just drone together. There's not big changes that will make you pay attention to the music. So that's another thing with writing for films and video. You don't want people to notice. You're trying to influence their emotion. You don't want them to be distracted and think, oh, this is a really cool song. So if you're doing your job right, they don't even know you're there, and they've completely forgotten about you.
So when you said that, that made me think, it's like, that's kind of the job of certain people doing the film too, right? It's like,
yeah, that, exactly.
That kind of manipulation of emotions without anybody understanding that it's happening.
Yep, and again, that's the editor, so I'm right-handed. Yeah. Hand. I'm just sitting there subtly manipulating you into feeling what I want you to.
Yeah, and doing it without you knowing.
That's, exactly.
That's interesting. Yes, maybe we could listen to another song and see where we go.
Thank you.
So this was a really fun one. It's a roller coaster, as you heard. There's a lot going on here. I call this my Coronata, which is coronavirus sonata. And this, I had Corona back in March. I was one of the first people to get it, unfortunately. And when I was recovering, you know, I got over the majority of the sickness, but I still had a pretty hard time walking and, you know, going about my daily life. I wasn't able to do much for a couple of weeks. So I sat and worked at my piano because that was easy. I could sit there. It didn't take a lot of energy. And I wanted to write something about what I was feeling. And back then in the spring, all of us, this was brand new, you know. We were just going into statewide shutdown. The whole world was shut down. I've never seen that happen. I don't think we really have since the Spanish flu.
Yeah. So
it was just kind of my interpretation of everything that was going on. You know, it starts out a little bit of life is business as usual, just kind of carrying on, but maybe a little undercurrent of uncertainty. And then I wanted to express the fear, the loneliness, the anger that people are feeling, and then also end on kind of a hopeful note. Because throughout this whole thing, we've seen a lot of horrible things, but also a lot of pretty amazing humanity has come out. You know, I was thinking of in Italy, seeing people singing opera out their balconies to each other, and people having drive-by birthday parties, or, you know, bringing their dog to the nursing home so the grandparents can see the dog or something. So, this piece, it's changes on a dime almost what the emotions are, but that kind of feels like what we're going through right now.
That's a pretty accurate description of my year in any event. I think it's pretty interesting to think about, and I think you're right, there have been some sterling examples of humanity rising up. I think we don't pay enough attention to those sometimes, and it's easy to lose sight of that with all of the other things that are clamoring for your attention. But it is nice to kind of remember that and capture that as a part of that piece. I think that's a nice, hopeful touch for sure. I'm always curious when I talk to people about that do write music about how significant is the impact of this year on the whole process, and did it result in writing more doom and gloom, or did people react by writing more hopeful stuff to try to kind of counteract things, or did that have, it sounds like it had kind of a gamut of different effects on your songs.
Overall I'd say I'm somber hopeful is my tune. My boss actually makes fun of me to challenge me to write happy music, as he calls it. I'm really bad at just writing something that sounds outright joyful. I don't think my stuff is necessarily terribly dark, but I do tend to pick minor keys are my favorite. But there's still kind of this like hopeful lift to it. So there's always a little current of maybe tension or unease, something going, but I try to make it overall a little hopeful. And this last song, my Coronata, this was a really fun one to just get all of my emotions out there. You know, there are times where I have more than my other pieces, there's very specific visuals in my head that I think about. And sometimes when I'm just pounding on it, I think of some of the anger and the frustration that we're feeling, but then it dissipates, you know, it's like, you can't be angry all the time. So it's just little short moments like that. And so overall this year, you know, we've seen some pretty low lows, but we've also seen, for me personally, I've had a lot of really good experiences this year too. So I'm trying to not let those get totally buried.
Yeah. I think it'll be interesting, you know, hopefully we're on the edge of starting to crawl out of the hole. And I think it'll be interesting to see what effect it has as people like get out of the doldrums, hopefully. And, If for the next year everybody's writing super happy songs, or you know how the backlash will be to the situation everybody's passed through, I think that might be pretty interesting to see.
I think there's going to be a huge surge in people going to live music. You know, I've never been one that, concerts were never really my thing, but I'd go occasionally, and I never knew how much I missed it till it was taken away from me. So I think we're going to see a huge surge in the music scene when we're all able to come together again.
Yeah, I think that's very true. I know some people, and I'm borderline one of those who really did a lot of live music, and you know, some of those people are like near despondent all the time now, and so I think you're right. It's when things are finally able, when people are able to have events again, I think there'll be a lot of them, and they'll be pretty well populated for quite a while, I expect. So I wonder, you know, I wonder if the same thing will be true about like films as well. I think that a lot of film production was probably either slowed way down, if not outright stopped this year. And I wonder, I would expect that a lot of people that are into more visual mediums might, like when the cork is pulled, there'll be a flurry of that too, I expect.
Yeah, I know. This has been a tough year for film for sure. I have a lot of friends who were scrapping by in Los Angeles. It's just, you know, it's a different ballgame. We've all had to get a little creative. So in some sense, film totally shut down, and these big Hollywood pictures where you have 100 people on a crew, everyone's gathered, that was really difficult. But on the same time, for me personally, with my work at PBS, we've seen an explosion in doing live coverage for events. So all of these things that you normally have a live audience for that can't, they rely on film to get their message out. So we've covered the Missoula Symphony, we've done some dance shows, we've done, what else, lots of lectures, lots of just things. So I think all of us had to get a little creative to where our usual film production was shut down, but when one door closes, another opens. So me and a lot of my friends who I know have just tried to make the most of it and see, like, okay, if we can't be on our sets right now, what else can we do with a camera?
Yeah.
So, and we've kind of seen a different type of story, too. I know I've seen a lot of friends start getting more into outdoors. We've seen a huge surge in people discovering the outdoors for the first time. But they're kind of realizing, like, oh, you know, here's a market I haven't tapped before. It's safe. We can social distance. It's less risky to be outside. So they made a lot of, like, hunting or exploring or hiking or just different kind of adventure films. So
yeah. Yeah, I mean, one thing about humans, we're adaptable.
Yeah.
We'll figure out some way to make things work for ourselves. So. Yeah, you want to play another song?
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you.
So of all the pieces, this is my favorite, and it's also the one that's closest to me. Wrote this very recently for a reason I'm not, it's difficult. We found out my sister-in-law passed away right before Thanksgiving. So this is a song dedicated to her. And, you know, again, kind of like with when I went to the Black Lives Matter march, so many emotions that I just couldn't really talk about. So it came out in the music, and the story that I had in my head for this one, you know, she loved being outside, she was an adventurer all around. They lived in California and were just moving to Arizona, and she loved the desert. She loved riding around in her Jeep, just being in the mountains, anything. She always had this amazing pulse of life to her, and I could not get this picture out of my head of her and my brother just sitting out in the desert by a campfire, looking up at the massive stars, and just kind of feeling this beat of life around you. And so this was my tribute to Ariel. So,
that's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it, that expansiveness, I think, kind of comes through.
Yeah, I would, you know, when I'm writing songs, I play them hundreds and hundreds of times. So whatever emotional impact I had at first eventually just kind of gets lost on me because I've heard it so many times. And I had recorded this as a video and sent it to my brother so he could have that. And I was having a bonfire with some friends, you know, it was the exact picture I was thinking. There was a campfire and there were stars above us, so just to see if I was on track, I played my song and listened to see how it felt, and I was kind of shocked with myself because I was so numb to it at this point that I almost didn't really even like it anymore. But sitting in that setting and hearing the music, it was kind of nice to get outside of my own head for a little bit. And
that kind of helped you actually approach it as
not
the thing that you've been doing over and over again.
Yep, and filming myself, you know, I've done this since I was a kid to try and learn and get better. When you're playing it, you hear it differently than when you do outside of it. So I would always record myself and wait 10 minutes and go listen to it, and I'd hear it completely different than how I thought I was playing it. So I'd hear all the mistakes I didn't realize I was making, I'd hear notes, you know, that I was emphasizing that I, again, didn't realize. And so that's always been a strategy, is just filming or recording myself and seeing it later. I've never really done that for an emotional sense like I did this one, to see, like, to check myself, like, hey, did I actually get what I was hoping to get across out there? And I think I did on this one.
Yeah.
So.
Cool. Yeah, do you have another song you'd like to play?
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you.
So this one, again, was something I did for video. Two very good friends of mine from college got married a couple years ago, actually. Through a long story of circumstances, their wedding video just never got put together. So 2 years later, they asked if I can edit their wedding video for them. They finally managed to wrestle the footage out of whatever filmmaker they hired to do this. And it, without, you know, bad-mouthing a fellow filmmaker too much, it's what they gave me was not really up to my standards, so it's difficult for me to make what I would consider a good video out of what I had. And I wanted to add something extra for them because these are two people I really care about, so I decided to write a song for their wedding vows. And that's what the last song we heard was for, Emily and Roger's wedding vows. And on its own, again, it sounds a little somber. I'm not the best at writing happy music, but it fits pretty well when the groom is crying and, you know, yeah. telling his soon-to-be wife how much she means to him. And that was fun. And it made me feel a little better to give them something extra, especially since they had to struggle with this video for as long as they have. You know, it's a day we all want to remember fondly, so.
Right. Well, I did think that, like, at the very beginning, that it was a very happy, you know, cheerful feeling,
Yeah, this was my honest-to-God best effort of writing something happy. We'll see how it came out. There's a little bit of Pachelbel's Canon, not quite the exact notes, but it definitely has that feel to kind of throw it back to a pretty traditional wedding song, so. Yeah, that was kind of my homage to a classic.
Yeah. Do you find yourself in situations like that very often? People, kind of friends, ask you for like a quick little bit of music for something, or write a song for this, or?
Not so much on the music end, because I'm still pretty new to that. I get that all the time for film and photo stuff. So I usually despise doing wedding videos unless it's a friend, so that's the only time I'll do it for people. Music, I would like to get into that more. But, you know, it's always been, not a secret, but it's always just been something of a hobby. I don't know if too many people knew that I was really writing stuff, so yeah, we'll see in the future. Maybe I'll get more of that.
Yeah. I laugh, you know, sometimes you hear songwriters and performers talking about that. It's like, oh, yeah. My friend, and then my other friend, and then my other friend asked me to write a song for their wedding, it's interesting how that works out.
I might have just shot myself in the foot with this one, offering it up freely for a wedding video.
That's right. The cat might be out of the bag now.
Luckily, most of my friends are already married, so there I might not have too many more requests.
Well, cool. Yeah. Do you have anything else you wanted to?
Yeah, I have one more. It's not a full song like the others we've heard, but this is a piece that I did for one of the films I was working on with our MSU students. Okay, so that was a lot of fun. I paired it with lots of big strings, you know, some very dissonant sound effects. This was for a horror film, and the scene that this is going right now, there, it's a little dark. There's a woman who is on a mission to rid the world of sexual predators, more or less. But the way she does that is becoming a serial killer herself. So rather, her way of dealing with these other problem people in society is just to kill them. So this scene that's happening, she has one of these horrible guys in her basement, and she's kind of, you know, doing the villain monologue at the guy and explaining, oh, like, I caught you, you know, I'm winning, you're about to die. So it was, it's very dark. I didn't want it to be happy by any means, but she is trying to be some sort of righteousness, even though she's going about it horribly, horribly wrong. So I wanted, this piano theme is kind of her underlying theme, where it's like, yes, you're a bad guy, but you're trying to do the right thing. So I didn't want it to just be lots of shrill violins and, you know, shrieky dissonant chords. So this is the little bit of melody that goes with all of those other parts.
I try to introduce the vengeful, vengeful angel kind of in there a little bit.
And then in the song you heard, there's some parts where it's just really big chords, you know, just kind of big booming sounds. Those lined up with the movie, so specifically what's happening, you know, she's stabbing the guy, so every time she stabs a guy, you hear a big chord.
Big bang.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, this has been very interesting. I usually am talking to people that are writing, you know, maybe they're writing Americana or pop or country or rock songs, so this was definitely a different flavor, but I really appreciate you talking to us today, and best of luck with the Masters. Hopefully that works out really smoothly, and look forward to maybe, you know, seeing you at the Academy Awards someday or something.
Yeah, I'd love that. And thank you for having me on the show. This has been a lot of fun.
All right. Well, thanks. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. We'll be back next week with another episode. We hope you've enjoyed this.